Texas Atlantic Development Committee to order. Moving right along. We have the agenda for today's meeting for us. Are there any changes?
I think 5 minutes.
Please suggest the agenda of the planning development real estate committee. None. We have consent to accept the agenda as presented. Excuse me. Will those in the back please take your conversations outside? Thank you. We have the minutes of the March 8th meeting presented. Are there any changes, corrections, additions, subtractions? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the minutes as presented?
So moved.
Mr. Graham, a second.
Second.
Second by Mr. Benjamin. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. The minutes are accepted as presented. And that takes us to our action item number 3, and that is relating to concrete deterioration.
Chairman Dave Couch will present this to you.
Good morning, Mr. Couch.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Alkali silica reaction, ASR, is a reaction that's a result of the aggregate that was used in the concrete with the cement. It's a chemical reaction that occurs over time and causes deterioration of concrete structures. This next slide shows what happens over time. It's a mapping pattern of cracking that occurs on the surface of the concrete. It occurs on concrete that was placed on the system in the mid-1980s and prior, where we used natural aggregate, basically river-run gravel, as opposed to a crushed stone. Over time, that deterioration occurs, and what we've done now is go back in and done analysis of each one of the structures. As you catch this early enough, you're able to go ahead and repair it, as opposed to having extensive deterioration of the concrete, which would cause structural problems. Where we do have it so far is on the red line, blue-orange line. It's basically at entrance ways, portals, vent and fan shafts. It's places that are exposed to the outside. This picture is the first street bridge on the red line. The next slide shows the actions that are necessary to go ahead and repair it. If you catch it early enough, what you do is you go ahead and coat it. That seals it. It keeps the moisture from getting into the concrete. If you do not go ahead and get the sealing done, over time that cracking expands. You wind up with spalling of the concrete, and then it's a much more extensive action that you have to take to go ahead and do the repair. So what we would do is to go ahead and do corrosion inhibitant coating followed by a breathable coating, and that would be the steps that would be taken now to prevent future deterioration. The action that's before you is to initiate and award a contract estimated at $1.3 million. It's the far cheaper by comparison to waiting solution to this, and it will preserve the integrity of our structure.
Mr. Couch, the alkali silica reaction is a reaction of the silica-containing aggregates and alkalis in the cement to what?
To the aggregate. If you think of the natural aggregate that you get that comes out of a river, for example, it's the tan or the brownish stone, the ones that are rounded over time. It's the chemical properties of that to the cement. What we use now and what started in the later 80s is crushed stone. It's normally a grayish blue stone. That comes out of a quarry operation that doesn't have those same chemical properties. It's something that the region went to in the mid-80s, and except for architectural concrete, there is very little use right now in the area of natural stones. Everybody's going to the crushed stone.
Okay, so basically this was a matter of the choice of stone that went in the cement.
That's exactly right.
And this item is from an existing budget.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Goff.
I feel appropriate for me to make the motion since the old style aggregate came from the gravel pits of Lee District, probably. So to make amends for that element of the county that's causing the problem, I'd be happy to move the item.
Motion by Mr. Coffin for the recommendation.
Second.
Second by Mr. McCullough.
I am familiar with ASR in my other life, and so it is a problem. But the question I have is this a one-time fix, or are we going to be seeing this every 5 or 10 years? I mean, what's your feeling?
The projected life of the coatings is 15 to 20 years.
Okay.
It's a relatively inexpensive fix. If we were to get into situations on any of these slides where you wind up with the spalling of concrete prior to doing this, it would be exponential what the cost would be to do the repair.
All right, thank you.
Just one question on the clarification. This is an 08 budget item?
Yes.
809.
Oh, wait. No, it's 07. Excuse me.
Yeah, 08.
Well,
that's what it says.
If we're looking at the table on page 11, it's the 08 and 09.
The expenditures would occur in 08 and 09. This is approval to go out for the contract during 07. We would advertise the contract in the next few weeks. By the time it would be awarded, it would be right at the beginning of 08. So the expenditures would occur in 08 and 09.
All right. So, but this is then contingent upon the adoption of an 08 budget that includes the line from which this is drawn. This is only so you get going on the contract for
this.
In regards to Mr. Giancarlo's question, what was, you were using this as an example, when was the structure built?
The structures were built anywhere starting in the early 70s up through the mid 80s.
Further questions? Question is on the motion to approve the staff recommendation to initiate an award competitive contract in the amount of $1.3 million. Initially. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Contingent on 08.
And in case I didn't say it again, this is all, of course, dependent upon the ultimate adoption of the 08 budget.
So you can, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
So you can award a contract without the budget being approved for 08?
I assume that the award would be...
The award would not be probably until in the first month or two of 08. If we put it out for bid right now, our process to go through...
Process.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it would be actually after July 1. But
yes.
Come back.
Although it wouldn't be unprecedented for a governmental body to award a contract subject to appropriation.
That's right.
That's often what happens.
That's right.
And the contractor's taking the risk.
That's right.
So that'll remind us.
Just so that's clear.
Very good.
Yes, it always is.
With that clarification, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. All right, we have one remaining item, something that this committee requested. Report back from the general manager regarding the expert panel on the Tyson's extension, the aerial versus tunnel issue, specifically regarding to operating costs. Mr. Cato.
Jim Higgins will open this up, and then we'll have a presentation concerning the findings of the peer review panel. Jim.
Expeditiously, if you would.
Yes, good morning. I want to take a moment to introduce our presenter. He is Pat Nowinkowski. Mr. Nowinkowski is the Assistant General Manager of Operations at SEPTA. He's responsible for operating divisions for rail transportation, bus transportation, air transit, the control center, vehicle engineering, and maintenance and labor relations. Mr. Pat Nowinkowski has been with SEPTA for 25 years. He is a graduate civil engineer from the University of Delaware. He also holds a master's in business administration. He's a licensed professional engineer. He's also a vice chairman of the APIT Commuter Rail CE Committee. He's also a member of the Rail Transit CE Committee and a chairman of the Rail Transit Standards and Policy and Planning Committee. So I think you can tell that Mr. Nowinkowski is very well qualified to make today's presentation. And without further ado, I'll turn it over to Pat.
Thank you, Jim. I guess thank you for having me. Very interesting issue that brought forward. Jim Higgins is the one that asked APTA to bring the panel together. If I go to the next slide. Nope. Where do we go to the panel? The panel consisted of Tom Donahue, who's a senior associate with Booz Allen Hamilton consulting firm, David Novick, who's an adjunct
professor, Department of Civil Engineering, Environmental Engineering at Northwestern University. He did publish a report on life cycle costing of tunnels and bridges. Brian Steets, Brian is superintendent of Way and Structures, PATH, going to the World Trade Center in New York and Northern New Jersey. Al Wojcik, Al is chief officer of track and infrastructure at the New York City Transit Authority. Fran Hooper from the APA staff is the one that tried to keep us all straight and focused on the point as we did this. And as Jim introduced me, I'm Pat Nowakowski from SEPTA. Just by way of background, we were asked to look at your structures and your tunnels, and WMATA, at 30 years of age, is just now beginning to really get into some of the structural issues as you look at your existing infrastructure. Specifically on the structures, as we understand it, we just saw the alkali report, but you're also starting substantial programs on bearing replacements of aerial structures. On the tunnels, the design of tunnels has progressed over the years from one in which some of the earliest tunnels had significant leak problems. Those leak problems are very much impact repairs because they lead to much deterioration within the tunnels. And stations. Stations has been the one area where you've spent the majority of your money, from what we understand in the past, your capital money to date. So the structural piece is just becoming a bigger picture of your capital program. Design life. We were asked to come in. The information that we had given indicated that there was a 50-year life for aerial structures and a 100-year life for tunnels. We had a difficulty accepting that. We looked at WMATA's specifications. Your standard specifications require the designer to design on the anticipation of a 100-year life for structures, aerial structures, as well as tunnels. And the experience of particularly the older properties, those going into New York, in Philadelphia and Chicago, is we all have aerial structures that are 100 years of age. So to assume a 50-year life for an aerial structure, we did not think was appropriate. We were asked to look at three different areas in the cost information. One is rehabilitation cost. That is the cost to keep things, the capital cost to keep things in a state of good repair. It is your ongoing capital program that you do, like the project that was just demonstrated. Those costs, the way they were determined is useful lives were determined for different components. Costs of replacement were for those useful lives were determined, and those, and a chart was put together, which you'll see later, which extend those costs over a period of years. On the operation and maintenance costs, that's the day-to-day maintenance. That's the people needed to inspect, to operate, to maintain, to fix, repair, et cetera. They are the day-to-day operating costs. And finally, we're asked to look at non-quantifiable factors, those things that couldn't be put in terms of cost. Some assumptions are in here, and they're pretty important. One, we did not consider construction costs. That is obviously a major factor in this project. We did not look at the construction costs. That is an issue that you obviously have to look at and impact on your decision. We did not look at the cost to replace the structure. We looked at, on the capital side, we looked at the cost to keep them in a state of good repair. We did not try to look out 100 years or 150 years and try to figure out what it would cost to replace those structures. As I mentioned earlier, we assumed for both structures, aerial and tunnel alignments, 100-year useful life. Common costs were not considered. And what I mean by common costs is when we were comparing a tunnel and an aerial structure. If the train control system, the signal system, the track needs to be replaced at 30, 40, whatever number of years, we did not look at those costs because they were the same costs for both alignments. If the life cycles were different in the different environments, then we did look at those costs. Further assumptions. We assume that the construction will comply with WMATA's design standards.
That's important because all the costing that we did, all the costing that we looked at, was based upon useful life of the different components that make up the system. And those useful lives are very much dependent upon the design standards that are used to construct those items. Costs will be consistent with MATA's current spending. All the costs that we got came out of MATA's capital program and operating departments. Those costs are consistent with costs that you're seeing today. Those estimates are based, the estimates that we put together or we reviewed were based upon the experience that the authority is going through right now today. We compared costs over a 60-year basis, and the first question will be why 60 years, and we did look in five-year increments. We were asked to look at 50 years, and the reason we chose 60 years is some of the major cost drivers that we looked at had useful lives of 30 years, and we thought it would be more appropriate to look at two cycles of life cycle costing for those major cost drivers and came up with a 60-year cycle as opposed to a 50-year cycle. Findings. Tunnel rehabilitation costs are lower, and these are rehab costs. These are the costs, as I said, for state of good repair of the system by $200 million for the tunnel. The aerial rehabilitation costs were $325 million. The tunnel rehabilitation costs were $125 million. Again, they're over a 60-year cycle, difference being $200 million. On the aerial, what we looked at is what's driving the cost. The bearing replacement is the major factor in there. The bearing replacement alone was, I want to say, 40% of the total cost over the 60 years. Tile pavers, concrete repair, elevators and escalators, and marker coils. Those five items alone represented 84% of the $325 million cost. So there's some real big-ticket items in those lists. The tunnel, on the other hand, was elevators, escalators, fire line piping, and structural repairs for the $125 million. If you look, the first three items on the aerial alignment are excluded in the tunnel. So the biggest cost drivers, and they are in order of importance, the biggest cost drivers are what is avoided by going to a tunnel construction. So those costs are eliminated. Is that the right one? I have a different chart. But let me explain what's going on here. What we tried to do is use a graphical representation. And the go to the next slide. I can use it. The graph tried to represent some of this information. The tunnel rehabilitation cost averaged $2.1 million per year over the 60 years. That's the $125 million divided by 60 years. The aerial rehabilitation was $5.4 million a year. Again, $325 divided by 60 years. But as that prior chart would have showed, though the rent, it's not a per-year cost. There's going to be tremendous variation, particularly in year 30 and year 60 in the life cycle costing of it, where the big structural items, the big cost drivers have to be done. It's not something that hits evenly. You're going to have to deal with it in a capital program. You probably wouldn't do that all in one year. You wouldn't spend that. You would spread it out over a period of years around that 30-year mark. But the fact of the matter is you need to budget that way. You need to look at it from that perspective that 30 years down the line we're going to have a big capital item here. So, you know, yeah, it's $2 million a year, it's $5 million a year for capital improvements, but there is significant fluctuation in those costs. And to put that in perspective, we looked at your capital budget, which is, I understand it is a 2004 to 2008 projection. And for similar items to what we looked at in here, you're currently budgeting about $232 million per year for those types of repairs, the same types of repairs that were in there. So you'll be adding to that number, that base, as you go forward. After we looked at the state of good repair, rehabilitation costs, we looked at the operation and maintenance costs. Now the costs flip. The operation and maintenance cost of the tunnel structure is going to cost you more. It's going to cost you in the order of $120 million a year more to do the maintain on a daily basis the tunnel structure. It's about $2 million a year for 60 years again. The cost driver here is staffing that you will need to maintain equipment, ventilation equipment, air conditioning equipment, heating equipment, pumping installations, sewage ejectors, all those types of items that you need with a tunnel. You have to maintain them on a daily basis. You have to have people to inspect them, lubricate them, repair them, change out parts that fail, et cetera, et cetera. So there is additional staffing that's needed on a daily basis. Now, this cost is, unlike the other one, it is a straight line cost. You're going to see this cost every year at a $2 million level. Obviously, all my numbers are today's dollars. They will obviously inflate over time as inflation affects it, but in today's cost. On the non-quantifiable items, we tried to look at items that clearly favored in our mind one system versus another system. And, you know, there was a good bit of debate over what these items should be and truly are. In the aerial structure, one of the advantages of an aerial structure is if there is a fire, as opposed to in a tunnel environment, it's a lot safer environment because you don't have to deal with smoke in a tunnel and the impacts of smoke in a tunnel. From a maintenance perspective, it's easier to maintain an aerial structure. It's much easier to deliver materials than it is in a tunnel. In a tunnel, you have to put it on equipment, carry it down there. On an aerial structure, you can just have a crane there and crane the materials up. So access from a maintenance perspective is an aerial advantage. Oops, go back. From a tunnel perspective, the advantages here are, one, because the tunnel is underground, there is not the property that you need, and there is certainly development potential in the area of the stations, in the area of where the alignment would be. Tunnel, certainly, as I understand it, for the people in Tyson's Corner, is a public opinion issue that you must deal with, and that is obviously a part of the decision-making process that you have to look at. From a customer's perspective, the ability to go into an indoor station and get out of the weather is certainly an advantage for a tunnel station. Concerns that we came up with. The tunnel design that was being proposed is a different design than WMATA has on their existing tunnels. It is called a large bore tunnel as opposed to smaller tunnels that is about double the size of the existing tunnels. And the configuration of some of that tunnel, particularly in station areas, is one where one track is over top of the other track. The station would actually be in two levels, and not like you cross now with two lines crossing. It would be within the same tunnel tube that these one track over the other, one platform over the other would exist. That's different than anything you have today. It is a new design in the business. There is a certain amount of risk anytime you undertake a new design, something that doesn't have that 100 years of experience that some of the other tunnel designs have and growth. Certainly, your waterproofing features would be those that you've progressed and the designs have improved over time, so your leakage issues should be less. But there is a certain amount of risk, and this could be a non-quantifiable issue that you have with assuming a new design. One of our other concerns, back please, was the when we looked at the aerial alignment, one of the cost drivers that I mentioned was tile pavers, and that is your design standards call for putting tiles in outdoor stations. Nobody else is doing that. It's really not a good idea. It is very maintenance expensive. Of that $325 million cost, this represented $48 million. It certainly looks nice, but from a cost perspective, you are impacting your costs in a way you don't need to impact your costs by building exterior stations with these paver tiles. You know, every station in the wintertime needs de-icing. The salt gets in there, it gets between the tiles, it causes them to pop. It drives your maintenance costs, and it's obviously a major driver of the capital costs here. So, but that's a design decision that you have to make. Conclusions. In our estimation, the net savings of $80 million, the difference between $200 million in state of good repair costs and $120 million of additional operating costs is not significant. And I don't want to minimize $80 million, but it is over 60 years. There are many other issues here that you and
your partners in all of this need to deal with, and that is the construction costs, your funding from the FTA. As I understand it, there's issues on the timing of this, how far you are already in the award of contracts and design process to go back and try to do things differently. There are many issues like that, and I mentioned what your customers want, what the people in Tyson's Corner want, that are probably more important than trying to justify the decision strictly on a financial basis. And that's really where we were coming from. If you thought the financials were going to drive the decision, we don't agree with that. We don't concur with that.
When you say financials, you mean on operating costs.
On these two costs.
Right.
The operation costs and the standard good repair. Again, we didn't look at construction costs, replacement costs, or anything like that.
And the significance of the distinction, just to clarify, is that from the standpoint of this agency, operating costs become part of the expense of the region, which this agency will bear and its members will bear through the various formulas. Whereas the construction issues, which relate to the question of how much does it cost to do tunnel resiliency versus how much benefit you get from doing the tunnel, those are almost entirely realized within the jurisdiction. So they are somewhat less of a concern for this agency, although they are clearly key points in the decision on the project. Let me clarify again. That's why we asked you to look at operating. And you distinguish between a number of different types of or categories of operating costs. And the bottom line, it seemed to me, is that in terms of life cycle costs, which really has to do with the major replacements over time, tunnel has a pretty big advantage. The ones that are more of an ongoing operating and maintenance issues, the aerial has an advantage, and you think it nets out to a slight advantage for tunnel, but not enough that would likely to drive the decision relative to the other things we're talking about.
Correct.
When you looked at in that second category, the operating and maintenance type issues, does that include things like, very specific sense of operating? For instance, in an aerial structure where we're exposed to weather, there are going to be things that have to be done in the wintertime.
Snow removal. Yes.
And things like that. Is that counted in this estimation?
Yes. All the costs, all the things that were put together were prepared by the APTA staff. We were the Monday morning quarterbacks who questioned them on these costs and make sure they included everything. That was more what our role
was. That was one.
But the snow removal cost was in there. There was a third-party cost allocated for that. As I indicated, you know, the number of people it takes to man a station, to operate a train, to maintain a signal system, to inspect the track, et cetera, et cetera, they were the same on either alignment. What drove the cost differential was primarily on the underground stations, the ventilation, the HVAC, the sewage ejectors, the pumps, all that equipment must be maintained. There is no equipment like that. On the aerial side, there's structure inspections that have to be done. So, you know, they offset it a little bit, but not enough. There certainly was more of a cost driver with the additional manpower, day-to-day manpower that was needed to do that operation and maintenance of that equipment, the station equipment primarily.
Thank you, Mr. Malkowski. Discussion, Mr. Giancola.
Yeah, related to your last comment, on page 12 you refer to the prime cost driver as staffing needs for the tunnel station maintenance and HVAC. I mean, HVAC systems don't last 60 years. Pumping systems don't last 60 years. You haven't really mentioned how often you'll have to replace those systems. And was that in your calculation of the operating cost?
Yes. The ongoing, and the whole chart wasn't in there, but the ongoing capital cost, state of good repair cost that you need for ventilation systems, that you need for pumps, et cetera, yes, they are in that $325 million cost.
Thank you. I was pleased to request this study, and I want to say at the outset that I don't recall anything giving this much bang for the buck in terms of $5,000. And I think we need more studies like this one, more reviews, that we can get this kind of thorough presentation, and I want to congratulate everybody who was involved in that from that point of view. My principal question probably doesn't go to you, sir, but probably goes to our general manager, which is springs off of your last point on page 15 and somewhat related to the tile paver rehabilitation costs on page 14. And that is that you state that it's important that WMATA, as WMATA moves from its role as building owner to just owner. And this herein is a great tension for us. It needs to ensure, you write, that its standards protect the authority in terms of future operating and capital replacement costs. And so the question that comes to my mind, which I'd be happy to have your thoughts on, but you know I don't want to exclude you from this question and answer, but to our general managers, how are we going to do this? And we know that on May 10th, the Finance Committee will have before it a proposal for WMATA Metro to assume the operating costs relating to this extension. As part of all of that, how are we going to achieve the point that is made here on page 15?
Well, I'm still in discussions on some issues with the airport authority who will oversee the construction of this. As we look at these type of information items, and that's the wonderful part about this report, we need to have those discussions from a standard standpoint to ensure what we're putting in from a TAO standpoint, it's economically from a maintenance standpoint. So we will have those discussions with the process as it moves ahead. I mean, there's a whole host of items that we're discussing with the airport authority concerning what type of equipment, rails, whether they're stainless steel or not, and these issues will come up also. So I might not have focused specifically on towels if it were not for this type of analysis. So it's going to help us as we move forward on that.
But our first and last real crack at this situation occurs in May. And to what extent are we going to have assurances regarding these issues at the time when we're called upon to vote on this matter? Because this is again, you know, one of those big looming unanswered questions that, you know, in our status as you know, really not having anything to do with this until it's time to operate it. I don't recall any real discussions about this at all before this board as to how we can minimize, you know, our future operating costs at this juncture.
There are issues and standards, I'm going to ask Jim to talk about this, in the agreement that we've discussed with the airport authority. And a good example was our standards on stainless steel rails that reduces our maintenance costs. The issue of the towels is just one that surfaced in this report. But Jim, if you could talk in a little bit of details about how that process will work.
Yeah, Mr. Graham, our whole role at this point on this project is just that issue, to assure that in the design phase, the design reflects the WMATA standards and design criteria. As we move into design build construction, to assure that the things that we approved in design that comply with our standards, those same design standards are actually constructed. And that's our role as future owner and operator. And that's the role that we're presently negotiating with IMWA that we hope to bring to the board in May, along with the financial plan and other aspects of this project that will assure you that WMATA and IMWA and the Commonwealth have reached an agreement that the WMATA standards are part of the design, are part of the firm fixed price, be part of the final project that we will accept.
So if I may, Mr. Chairman, so you would be giving us a detailed assurance or assurances in this regard on May 10th.
That's what we're attempting to secure from IMWA in our interagency agreements, that they will fully comply with our design standards and our criteria as they implement this project. That's a key element
of our
agreement.
Do you have anything to add to this?
No, one thing I would add, I guess, is that when we were looking at this, and you go through a whole bunch of costs and a whole bunch of factors, and we're looking at all this stuff, and we got into a whole discussion on the stations of escalators and elevators. What's in the aerial stations? What's in the tunnel stations? How many escalators? How many elevators? What's it cost to maintain them? What's capital cost to keep them in a state of good repair? And we ran into a very difficult time of trying to find out what was the latest in terms of how many escalators and elevators there were in those stations. And what we found out is it was a moving target that the designer was moving ahead on and making decisions, and WMATA wasn't approving those decisions. So that there is a certain disconnect that exists between these two types of organizations and these two types of roles that you have to be very careful in how you do this, or else you know, you have a consortium here that's doing this project that is going to work to a bottom line, and it's a design-build project as they build it. So you have to be very careful that, you know, as costs get tight and as costs escalate and that type of stuff, and they're trying to work within a budget, that they don't make design decisions that ultimately affect you on the back end, whether they be maintenance costs or ongoing state of good repair costs.
I think that's a good point, and I think it's important that we ensure that, you know, we go forward with this, that we have Vermont personnel at every stage of those decisions who can identify those issues so that we will know if something comes up and there won't be a surprise later. That some cost-cutting decision was made on the part of the contractor doing this, which we are then expected to take on.
I think, Mr. Dad, to what Pat just said, I think this committee, the board, has heard from time to time redundant elevator debates, whether redundant elevators are part of the project or whether they're out of the project. And that still is a continuing discussion about the scope of this project.
And Mr. Chairman, I want to assure you that May is the date that we're scheduled to bring this in front of this board, and we're still having discussions on the specific issues. And we would not ask for you to approve it if we don't have those issues resolved to the satisfactory of this organization. And that's the discussion I've had with the Airport Authority, and I've had a discussion with Mr. Bennett there, and we have a meeting scheduled again to go over the 9 items that are remaining, that those items have to be resolved to the satisfactory of this organization before we bring anything for your approval.
Thank you. Mr. Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. General Manager, for that clarification. We thank you for that. It gives us some comfort. One thing I would add, Pat, welcome. How are you?
Good, Gordon. Thank you. Gordon was an ex-board member in Philadelphia, if you weren't familiar. So we go back a few years.
Yeah. One thing I will add, the new notation about the tiles, that's a standard change, correct? If we were to go forth with that, that is not something that we currently would consider part of our station standards. That would be a new innovation. And if we made that change, that would something, you know, it's good information to know, but it'd be something that we would probably want to do in all our extensions in the future. Unfortunately, we got through the one at Georgia and some others, and we didn't do that, including Largo and some other places where we got some aerial work there. But it's something that if we had known, we could have made some changes there.
If I might add, Mr. Linton, the board and committee might recall from our presentation, one of the things we were attempting to do when we introduced the new porcelain tile was to cope with some of the high maintenance issues that are really reflected in these numbers, to drive those, to not make paper tiles a cost driver in the rehab and maintenance facilities. So that was part of a lesson learned and a change in our current design standards.
Sure.
So that's why
we
went to porcelain.
Savings are assumed in what we
Yes,
the
savings are assumed.
Yeah.
Supervisor Hutchins.
Thank you very much for the presentation. And I was going to highlight that because I think that presentation has enhanced something for us that we did not do. I think that's part of the presentation. There was also a piece in the minutes in which I asked if we could have a similar comparison of the costs that went on in the last extension, because it here in place, I think, would reflect something we could have learned then as well, as we provided an aerial extension of the New York Avenue, I think it's the
yes.
station. And so that cost. Yeah, it was. Yeah, the
area.
And I think to emphasize the point that I think was made much clearer by the general manager that we Virginia folks wear two hats in this. And the issues that you raise here are no different than the issues that we have to raise at home, for example. The redundancy of elevators and all of those issues that will not only contribute to not only cost, but the life cycle in terms of serving the customer for the long term of it. And so I don't expect us to be driven and by simply the cost to WMATA. We will be driven by that cost as it affects us equally with the jurisdictional part, and I think they're in partnership together on that. So I think The critical aspect is that we can continue to work toward the items that are in discussion and that they can be concluded in a timeliness for the May 10th vote.
Ms. Hall. A couple comments. First, Mr. Nowakowski, you should realize that you probably have made every Metro staffer jealous because you went through an entire presentation and had the board quiet, attentive, no interjection, and without prior prompting, we remained quiet and focused. So, John, keep this guy in mind.
We're just nice to visitors.
Or we're worn out.
I thought it was Donovan.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, as I say, I was impressed. I must admit the numbers did not come back as I thought they might. The big concern for us as a regional body is what does it cost over time? And the delta, it's just a hair over $1 million a year. And I have to concur that is not a significant number in a $1 billion budget. The non-quantifiable issues, of course, remain. And those remain at the state and local level. And the challenge that we face at that level is unless there's a change on the part of the FTA in what they are allowing us to do, I think, frankly, the FTA either desperately needs Gordon Linton or needs to listen. And they both have L's. For us to even get to a tunnel as an option, they have to give us that additional time that they told the media at one point, yes, we have it, and then they immediately called back and said, oops, no, we didn't say that. They need to let us do an environmental review, a revisiting of an environmental review rather than a restarting environmental review. And they need to keep the federal money in a lockbox. And frankly, we haven't seen any movement on any of those areas.
Never seen a federal lockbox either.
No. So I would say I agree with Mr. Graham. This is probably one of the better $5,000 investments we've made. And it's great to be introduced to a great professional in the industry. But it goes back to where Mr. Graham is, and I concur. And as I emphasize exactly what Ms. Hudgens did, Kathy and I wear two hats. After nights of budget hearings, it feels like we have two heads. And we're going to be fighting, too, to get those questions answered for you for us. Because ultimately, this has to be a seamless operation. America's subway is now corporate opportunity when it comes to expansions. And now we need to make it fit. I initially hoped to make much more of this, but I don't think I can.
Mr. Okoski, thank you very much for this presentation.
You're welcome.
Just one, perhaps a kind of a footnote, but I think a significant one. I would just remind the general manager that this board, really in an echo of what the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors had passed, we passed a resolution several months ago. And I would hope that in May, when this matter returns to the board, that we have a clear enunciation of each one of the points in the resolution, because that should guide you in terms of this board's views on this matter. And we were very specific, and again, we were following the lead of Fairfax in setting forth some very specific standards and inquiries. And I, for one, would like to see what the responses are to all of that.
Yes, sir. That's clear.
So you'll have that for us as well?
Definitely. I understand what you're asking me for, and we will be very clear in our responses.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, to a certain extent, I guess I could say I'm rushing to Mr. Cato's defense. We're also trying to get a lot of questions answered. And if either of us are able to obtain those answers by May 10th, I'll be amazed. So we'll see where, as the answers are slow in coming.
So so stay tuned. And that's the last word. The board will be going into closed session discussions previously authorized. This committee meeting is adjourned.